interested in the structure of many body eigenstate in the localized space and about dynamics. And so, and what I would argue is that really the sort of characteristic feature of this phase is the existence of many, many local conservation laws. And using this picture of conservation laws, we would be able to understand dynamics and actually show that it is very universal. And one interesting universal dynamical feature that would emerge is the fact that if you start from some product state, which is not an eigenstate, the entanglement entropy grows as logarithm of time. And so, and this is work done in collaboration with Max Serbin and Zlatko Papic, who is in the audience and is based on these two recent papers. So first, let's quickly recall the single particle under some localization. So you can find under some localization already in very simple models. For example, like this one shown here. So let's consider a one-dimensional tight binding model with some hopping parameter t, and let's add on-site disorder, right? So we draw on-site energies from some distribution. And so, and turns out that adding disorder complete, so the essence of Anderson localization is that adding disorder completely changes the nature of wave functions. So instead of propagating Bloch waves in a clean crystal without disorder, your wave function become localized and look something like that. So there's an envelope, they're centered somewhere, and they decay exponentially away from it. And this change in the wave function means that transport properties completely change, and it means that there is no more diffusion in your system, and your system turns into an Anderson insulator. So this is beautiful and well known, and for my talk today, I would need just one more ingredient. So let me take the Anderson model, and let me add interaction to it, right? Let me add short range interaction to it, and of course, I would want to consider a situation where the density of particles is finite. So let's say if I'm increasing the system size, I would also want to increase the number of particles. So and the kinds of questions that I would be interested in would mostly concern dynamics. So imagine, for example, that we prepare some initial state, right? And from the experimental point of view, it's very natural to prepare product states. And then I very generally can ask what are the laws of the subsequent evolution. So, and how do these laws change as I vary interactions and disorder strength. And this is a very old question. So first asked by Anderson in 1958. But recently there was really a revival of interest in this problem. So first of all, so let me draw a phase diagram. So let me keep hopping and disorder strengths constant, and let me vary interactions. Okay, let me ask, so what changes as I turn on interactions and vary them? And first of all, there are two simple limits in this problem where we know what to expect. And first limit is when I just put interactions to zero, right? So then I have a bunch of non-interacting particles which are moving in a disorder potential. So then I know that I'm back to single particle Anderson localization. This point is characterized by the absence of diffusion. And for example, if I would look at some local operator, its spectrum would look discrete, right? So there is some effective local, something that looks like an energy gap if you look at the matrix element of a local operator. Another limit, which is simple, at least on the intuitive level, is the limit of strong interactions, right? So naturally, we expect that if the interactions are strong, then dynamics becomes ergodic. And essentially, whatever initial state you prepare, it would evolve to a stationary state, which would be described by the laws of statistical mechanics, right? So in this limit, we expect that things would thermalize, and we expect fast transport of energy and particle number. And so, and let's say if I if I look at some local operator, it would couple states with arbitrary close energy, right? So I could say that locally the spectrum is continuous. Now, really non-trivial question is, so what happens in between? So what happens when interaction becomes of the order of the disorder strength, right? In particular, so first question to ask is, so does localization survive at small v, right? So if we start from an insulator and turn on weak interaction, so does localization survive? And if it does, so what are the properties of localization, the localization transition? Yeah?
In a strong interaction, I think we still have a localization, right?
No, why?
In a strong interaction, whether localization can still be defined or not.
It can be in principle,
so
right?
Basically, we have strong interaction and we have a strong impurity, but irrational feeling. And that seems still an insulator.
You see, Shogong, so yeah, thanks for asking this question. So let me emphasize that I want to forget everything about ground states, right? So I really want to think about highly excited states, which are sitting, you know, in the middle of the band, let's say, right? So where the level spacing is tiny and decays exponentially with the system size, right? So such that we don't have to worry about, about ground states.
I was about to ask the same question.
Right. So I want to pose the problem differently from, let's say, from, you know, the way it was in, let's say, Altshuler's work, right, where they were really interested in being closer to the ground state.
I see. So, but maybe let's talk a little bit about ground. I mean, from your picture, maybe if you only consider excitation a little bit above ground state, maybe there is no thermalization even with strong fire.
That's possible because of course, right, I can't pin down, right?
I see.
Right, so if I have disorder,
if you consider high enough station,
yes,
always the modulation, we have strong,
yes okay. Right, so
you
generally I think
thermodynamic transition, hmm? You want to argue that this thermodynamic transition,
this transition between localized and delocalized phase,
no, some microcanonical space,
right it is, so well, it would be a transition, so I think there is a transition in the properties of eigenstates, right, and in the dynamical properties. So now whether there would be some kind of thermodynamic signature, I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
So again, So if you consider many body eigenstates, so it looks like the picture could be that at a low enough energy, maybe you still have a Poisson distribution for the many body form.
For the localized,
and then high enough energy, you eventually came to the Wigner distribution.
You mean so there would be some kind of mobility edge?
So there's a level repulsion in a many body sense. So it looks like that your picture suggesting that. I mean, then when you have really
you mean on this side? On this side.
That you mean thermalization.
Right.
And,
right.
Below certain energy threshold, there's no thermalization.
That's possible. So I can tell you that, you know, right now pretty much nothing is known about the many body mobility edge,
yeah.
Right? Because numerics is limited to really small systems and it's very hard to catch it. I mean, we tried and I'm sure other people tried and really there is nothing conclusive. Like a glass state, you mean if you have the mobility edge?
Yeah, because you will fall off equilibrium.
Right. And that's a very interesting regime as well, which I will not. So I will actually focus on the simple regime when all the states are localized. I'll focus on this one. But first, for those who haven't heard about this problem, so let me say a couple of words about the recent progress. So currently the more or less accepted hypothesis is that localization does survive at weak interaction. And this is the result due to Altshuler and collaborators, and also Mirlian and collaborators, and they essentially came up with a set of perturbative arguments, and the essence of these arguments is that if you start from the Anderson insulator and you consider some excitation, then you can count the number of configurations it can decay into, right? It can in principle generate a lot of particle-hole pairs. And the question is really, so does the matrix element for such a process decay faster than the number of finite of possible configuration. And they argue that it does, right? And this essentially means that far resonances are absent and that excitations remain localized, at least in the limit of weak interactions. And this is, of course, a hypothesis. This is very far from being a proof. But this hypothesis did receive quite a bit of support from numerical work recently by David Hughes and many others since 2007.
When you say decay is faster, you're talking about system size, time?
What? No, I'm talking about, let's say I ask, so what is the probability that, what is the matrix element, right, which connects a given excitation to some state where I created, let's say, n particle hole pairs, right? And of course, the issue is that number of ways in which I can create several particle hole pairs grows very quickly, right? Because I have many options to do it, right? It grows exponentially, but turns out so does the matrix element, right? So it becomes a competition of whether matrix element decays fast enough not to make such processes likely. So this is the essence of this argument. So in this talk, I will focus on the properties of the many-body localized phase. And as you will see sometime into the talk, this is the easy part of the problem, right? So and the transition and the delocalized sphere are harder parts, and this is for the future. So but for the many-body localized phase, so I will I will argue that this phase is quite simple, right? So it has a lot of local conservation laws, which first of all imply that all the excited states have short-range entanglement, right? So excited states in the many-body localized phase are like ground states of usual systems, and this would also let us understand dynamics and argue that there is universal logarithmic growth of entanglement in time. And so, and I will also show some numerics which supports all of this.
So yeah? The picture we just described seems to apply to this case. That is a low lying station awesome distribution. Behind the station we bring for the original distribution.
Yes.
Okay.
You see, I would be talking about the case where all states are localized, where you don't have the mobility edge.
Oh, I see. So
because
I see.
Right. So this is deeply localized phase. Right.
And you only consider the. Oh, I see.
Yes.
You don't
and
high excision to.
No. I do. But there is a broad regime where actually all states appear to be in. I will show a model, right, where all states appear to be localized, even in the middle of the band.
But for free system.
No. For interacting system. Yeah. I will show it in a couple of slides. Right. So, but also before I start showing the model and results, so let me just spend 1 minute on trying to tell you why many people suddenly are again interested in this problem. Right. So first interesting thing is that. Essentially, this is an example of a class of systems which do not thermalize, right? So they show some new regime of non-ergodic quantum dynamics, and you know this dynamics is not described by statistical mechanics. Now, of course, all physical systems are disordered, some more, some less, but many of them are strongly disordered, right? And in principle, this physics appears in many strongly disordered systems. And also this problem turns out goes beyond condensed matter, and in particular, so it has very interesting connections to adiabatic quantum computing, for example, and other connections as well. Now, another reason is due to experimental developments. So, of course, it was natural to ask these questions already in the context of disordered semiconductors. Now, the problem is that it was very hard to study the effect of electron-electron interactions on the localization there, because there you always have phonons, right? And phonons always provide some kind of buzz and, strictly speaking, destroy localization. So there it was hard to disentangle effects of phonons from the effect of electron-electron interactions, right? That's why studying many-body localization there remained out of reach. But of course, over past 15 years ago, so we now have all these systems which are quite different, which are isolated and have good coherent times and which are well controlled, and so some examples are mentioned here. So these are spin systems in diamond, polar molecules, and so on. So
how
about localization in the Mott insulator? Well, strictly speaking, no, right? Because this is the ground state, right? This is a different kind of insulator, right? So this would be, it's possible that if you dope it and disorder, then it might fit into this category, right? But I think that probably, if you're thinking about solid state systems, right? So if you have phonons, probably again, phonons would be a problem. So, but the bottom line is that now it seems that it's possible to study this phenomenon experimentally. So as you will see, most of what I will say would be general, but it would be convenient for us to illustrate it with a simple model and in particular to do numerics with it, right, and show that all our conclusions work. And the model I would consider was essentially what I already showed. So this would be spinless interacting one-dimensional fermions. This model is equivalent to random field XXZ spin 1/2 chain, right? So mapping is very intuitive. So you can match the terms one by one. So for example, random on-site energy in the fermionic model is equivalent to random field in this model. Then hopping is equivalent to the flip-flop terms, and the interactions are equivalent to the SZSZ interaction. And I will use the fermionic and spin language interchangeably. So I'll go back and forth without warning. And so as I mentioned, we would study really highly excited states near the middle of the band. And so good thing about this model is that you can use disorder as a tuning parameter, and you can tune into localized phase and into the delocalized phase. Okay, so this was demonstrated in previous works by David and his collaborators, and let me just show one signature which is very telling. So if you look at the level statistics, right, you see that as you crank up disorder, right, you go from the Wigner-Dyson statistics to the Poisson statistics, and this is just some measure from the random matrix theory which allows you to tell this two apart, and this is really taken near the middle of the bench. Going back to the question, right? So there is a transition between delocalized phase and localized phase. So in the context of, previously in the context of superconductor insulator transition, people were usually interested in the response functions, for example, in the conductivity, right? So that was also, for example, motivation in Altshuler's paper. But turns out that it's also very insightful to consider a different kind of setup where you're doing effectively a quench. So let's start with some product state, and let's time evolve it, and let's ask how does it change. So for example, how do properties of some subsystems change with time? And so and this was done numerically about a year ago by Joel's group. And the results were quite insightful. Well, so which quantities to look at in such setup? So first quantity they looked at was fluctuations of the SZ projection, let's say, in the left subsystem. SZ projections is the particle number, right? And here you see no surprises. So you find that the fluctuations of the particle number, so they start from zero because you started with the definite particle number, and then they grow, and then they saturate at a value which depends very weakly on the system size, right? So it tells you that all the action is limited to the boundary between the two regions, right? So this independence on the system size. So this just confirms that at strong disorder you do have localization. However, what they did next, they decided to look at a more complicated quantity at the entanglement entropy. And this is where really the big surprise came. So what they found is that as soon as you turn on even weak interactions, you find that entanglement starts growing logarithmically in time, and it reaches values which are extensive in the system size. Right? So saturated value follows volume law rather than area law. And some features of this, so it's quite surprising. So as I said, so it follows saturated value follows volume law. Now, of course, at zero interactions, right, you find an area law, right? You find that entanglement grows a little bit due to hops near the boundary, and then it saturates at a constant value, independent on the system size. And just for you to appreciate how surprising this numerical result was, is from here you see that the entanglement entropy keeps growing at very, very long time scales, right? Up to 10 to the 10 inverse exchange constant. Right? So it tells you that there are really, really tiny time scales in your problem. Right, so and what you conclude from this is first of all that even very weak interactions make a difference, right? And they change at least some of the properties of the localized phase. And as a side remark, right, so this log growth of entanglement, it's a new regime of information propagation in the many body system. And at the time, so it was not clear where this comes from, and Joel hypothesized that maybe there is some weak non-ergodic transport, which is sort of glassy, such that there are very rare moves, right, across the boundary. So, but reality turns out to be much simpler actually. So, and I will illustrate to you the mechanism of this entanglement growth using first using a very simple example, but the physics would become clear, I hope. So let's consider localized phase, and let's consider just two particles. And let's prepare these two particles some distance x away from each other, but each particle would be prepared in a superposition of two localized states nearby. So I have, in total, my ingredients are, I have four localized orbitals, 1, 2, 3, 4, and I start with a wave function which looks like that. And I let it evolve and ask what happens. Now, of course, in the absence of interactions, the evolution is trivial, right? All I have to do, so each creation operator, its evolution is just multiplication by the phase, right? So they all evolve independently, and it remains roughly a product state, right? So there is no entanglement generated, or you know, at most exponentially small entanglement. But as soon as I add interaction, things change. So and the key is to realize that. First of all, eigenstates stay the same because the particles, of course, are very far away from each other. They interact very weakly, right? There is only exponentially small chance that they would meet each other. So eigenstates, to a very good precision, remain the same.
What's
yeah.
The Hamiltonian here?
Huh?
What's the Hamiltonian?
It's the same. It's one dimensional. So one dimensional disordered fermions. This
so
one.
You had some
of course. Yeah. But what I did, I assumed that okay. I assumed that I found the eigenstates of the non-interacting part, right? And then I just have two particles, so I can treat interactions sort of perturbatively, right?
Well, what if you didn't do that? I mean, really, the eigenstate isn't that in the presence of the object.
Huh?
The eigenstate in the presence of the object really is not that.
Well, you see, I already picked... No, it is that, because I already picked C's to be eigenstates of the... of the single particle Hamiltonian, right? This is it. So I want to start from, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So, but the energies of these states would change, right? And this is because, so in the leading order, I can just find this correction using perturbation theory, right? So there would be an exponentially small correction. it seems completely negligible at the first glance, but if you think about dynamics and entanglement, it's not, right? It turns out to be the key, actually. Because this is because the interactions cause dephasing. So if I wait long enough, they would give rise to the phases which are of order 2 pi. And they would actually entangle these two particles. Okay? So this would happen over time, which is very long, which is exponentially long in the separation of the two particles. Right? So it goes as a inversely with interaction strength, exponential of x over xi. So this looks very simple. So just to check that, you know, we didn't do some very simple mistake. So you can do numerics, right, with just two particles first, and you find that exactly this happens. So you plot entanglement entropy as a function of time, and you find that for zero interaction there is nothing happening, but as soon as you turn on very weak interaction, entanglement entropy starts oscillating. And you know, it starts oscillating because there is only one frequency in the problem, right? So of course it would come back. They would get entangled and disentangled and so on. So it all makes sense for two particles. And now with this simple intuitive picture in mind, we can really understand the case of many particles. So, but of course, first we would need, right? So the way we did it is we assumed something about the eigenstates. So hypothesis that we would need is that when interactions are weak, then many body eigenstates remain close to the Slater determinant non-interacting eigenstates. So close is a tricky thing here, right? So close doesn't mean that they're related by simple perturbation theory. It means that if you start from a Slater determinant state and add interaction, you would get an eigenstate by a sequence of local unitary transformations, which are small if interactions are small. So far, I did not. I mean, so far, I'm far from thermalization, right? So, I mean, you will see. It's because I mean, so far, I did not even describe the picture to you, right? So once I describe the picture, it would be clear why it doesn't thermalize. So, Well, that's what we are doing, right? So I'm trying to develop a picture and explain this log growth of entanglement, right? But then we would also understand the structure of eigenstates. Yeah. So, right. So then the energies of the true many-body eigenstates I can find perturbatively, right? So I can write some horrible perturbation theory which has interactions between two particles and in principle between groups of three particles which would appear in the next order in the interaction and so on, right? So this perturbation theory looks horribly complicated, but the good news is that we don't need to know its exact structure, right? So, but what we need to know is that if we start from some initial product state, right, this interaction corrections, if I wait some time t, right, they would entangle degrees of freedom, distance x away from each other, you know, after time which goes as h bar over interaction strength exponential of x over xi, right? That's in principle all we need to know. And we can, you know, if I start from some generic state, right, which has extensive participation ratios in the eigenstates, I can convert this into the law of growth of entanglement entropy, right? So I get that entanglement entropy goes as localization length time log of Vt over h, right? So this is the law that governs the growth of entanglement entropy. And so, we did a lot of different numerical tests, which I'll be happy to tell you afterwards. So let me just show a couple of simple things. So one simple thing is that you find that at the weak interactions, really entanglement is a function of product of interaction strengths times time. You see that a strong, so here different curves are for different interaction strengths. You see that there are some deviations from it at stronger interactions, which is natural because at that point, next order corrections in the interactions start playing a role. So then it has to be modified. Yeah?
Entanglement modification will happen only at the boundary.
No. This is the point. It will happen everywhere if you wait long enough, right? That's why you get the volume law.
Your toy model, you had
Yes. In my toy, well, I mean, in my toy model, they would get entangled even if they start out being very, very far from each other, right? You see, this is exactly the point, right? Because there is interaction. If you wait long enough, they would get really, right? Even though they are much further from each other than localization lengths, they would get entangled with an element entropy of log 2. No, I don't care. I mean,
I'm worried about equal 1 is much lower than 2.
Ah, okay, okay, I understand.
There is no way for them to mix that.
So,
be trapped at the 1 and the 3. So, here you
are. Ah, okay, okay.
So, 1 and 2 are degenerate, 3 and 4 are degenerate.
3 and 4, no, they don't have to be degenerate. They actually, that's also how I prepare the state, right? Because if I prepare product state, I would generically, you know, have a superposition of particles in different localized orbitals.
Okay.
Right. This is very generic. I don't, right? I mean, in principle.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's actually, they will. I would argue that they will have very different energy, and that's not a problem. Yeah. So, right. So we can also predict various other things. Yeah.
Oh, you prepare them to be entangled
state. Well, no, no. They start out being not entangled. Right, you start out with some arbitrary state. Right.
Your prepared state will be the eigenstate, and only one. You don't have enough energy to jump to two.
Yes. Of course, but if you think, you know, what kind of states you can prepare, right? You would prepare some product state.
Yeah.
And you don't even know exactly what your true localized eigenstate look like, right? So very generically, it would be a superposition, right? Each particle would be a superposition of a few. Right. And of course, we can, right? You can. Yeah, yeah. But this is very natural for kinds of experiments that people, let's say, would do with cold atoms. Yeah.
Can you partly justify this correlation into entanglement
rules? Yes, you can. I mean, it's a bit so.
Okay, so it was not obvious from your explanation.
Yes, but yes.
Right.
You mean entanglement grows for two particles or for many particles?
For many particles,
yeah. I mean, what you need to do, right, is to start with some state like this, right, and just see how the density matrix evolves when you pick up phases, and then you just convince yourself, right? You can, I mean, okay, it's a bit that you need to write a couple of formulas, right? But you convince yourself that phases get randomized. So what happens, right? So you start with a pure state times pure state. Yes.
The square.
Right.
So it follows directly
from this. I mean, intuitively it follows, but you can make it more, right? You can say that, okay, so let's start with this state, right? And let's trace the time evolution of its density matrix. And then, you know, because so phases you're picking up are very special, right? So for example, if you wait a time which is this, right? States which are the same distance x into it, but are different further away, they pick up the same phases, right? Because their difference gives rise to the energy splitting, which is in the next order, right? Which is exponentially smaller, right? So that's why you only pick up entanglement which comes from this region of size x, right? So maybe we'll come back to it.
So
I don't know if it makes sense.
For any dimension.
Yeah.
So the entanglement is really not in terms of mass transport, but some dipole. Because you have a localized state here. You can change the phase.
So you could say it's dipole, right? So you see that so particles do not get transported, right? But the information does, right? And this information is in the phases.
Coherent dipole.
Yes. Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it dipole. It doesn't have to be dipolar, right? Here, it's actually exponentially weak interactions.
No, but the objects that you are talking
about. Objects are.
Localized object in your time model.
Mm-hmm.
Had a dipole structure. The particle can be in two sides.
Yes.
What this does is change the relative amplitude and phase.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So in that sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not dipolar interaction, but it has the same structure. So. One can also predict, right? You can essentially, from this picture, you can tell everything about the entanglement growth. For example, you can predict the saturated value and the slope, right? So because it's determined just by the by what initial state you prepared, how it decomposes in terms of single particle eigenstates, right? And essentially you end up in a local diagonal ensemble, right? Where filling factors of different orbitals do not change, but the phases do, right? Phases get randomized. So you can make predictions about the saturated value of atomic entropy, and it confirms by numerics very nicely. So I'll be happy to show you the results if anybody cares to see them. So, but now let me proceed to maybe the more interesting part. So we've considered really weak interactions, right? And we've assumed that we can start from single body localized phase. But it doesn't have to be this way, right? In principle, localization can be found also as stronger interactions. So let's ask, so can we describe the structure of the many body localized phase more generally? And in particular, so is dynamics universal, or what we found is specific to, let's say, weak interactions? And the answer is actually yes. Yes, you can describe the phase and the dynamical behavior we found is universal. And our strategy would be to define local integrals of motion and then infer the structure of Hamiltonian in terms of this local integrals of motion. And then, as you will see, this would let us understand dynamics. And just to give you a hint of why this makes sense, right? So if you think about it really, so what let us make progress in the weak interaction is that implicitly we assumed, well, this should be actually filling number, not creation operator. So we assumed that the filling numbers of the single body localized orbitals are integrals of motion, right? Of course, in reality, they have to be slightly deformed to be integrals of motion, but so far we ignored it. So let's now consider the general case. So I have, so it's 37, so I have 8, 5, and then 5 for question, right? Yeah. So let me give you sort of heuristic arguments of how to define local integrals of motion. So let's assume that our system is in a many body localized phase with some localization length xi. Then the key property, which you can, you know, if you're paranoid as we are, so you can check it numerically in various ways, and indeed it holds. So this property is that if you act with a local perturbation, it acts locally. Right, so it does not affect degrees of freedom far away from where you apply this perturbation. And the implication of this is that you can obtain eigenstates from product states by a series of local unitary transformations. So how to argue this? So let me consider my system and let me chop it into pieces. So let me turn off couplings between, let's say, this subsystem, and so on. So I just have a bunch of disconnected subsystems of size L, which is much greater than localization length. Then my eigenstates, right, of such chopped up systems are just product states. Now, when I connect them, right, when I connect them for each subsystem, this is a local perturbation, right, which is acting only near the boundary. So in order to get the true eigenstate from this product state, I would have to act near each boundary, right? I would have to act with a local unitary transformation, which has a support which only extends distance psi into each subsystem, right? Right. So eigenstates are obtained from product states by local unitary rotations, by a sequence of local unitary rotations, which are almost commuting with each other. They're not quite commuting, but they're almost commuting. And using this simple fact, I can now define the integrals of motion in terms of certain projectors onto groups of eigenstates. So idea is to essentially you label the true many-body eigenstates by their product state ancestors, and then if I sum over all possible states outside a given subsystem, right, I get something like that. And I can argue that this is essentially local unitary operators acting on some really operator with support within the system. So it should have really these operators are local and they would be integrals of motion by construction because they're projectors onto eigenstates. And so intuitively these quantities tell us how a given subsystem behaves. right? So it might look innocent, but it actually has interesting implications, right? So it tells us, first of all, that even highly excited eigenstates can be obtained from product states by really some short sequence of local unitaries, right? So which means that the even highly excited states in this phase are short-range entangled, like ground states of gap systems, right? So it's very likely that it should be possible to efficiently simulate the states using matrix product states and tensor network states in higher dimensions. So this is something for the future. So for now, let me do two things. So let me show you some numerical tests which support this hypothesis that I described, and let me also briefly describe dynamical properties. So first thing to look at is, and to check that's indeed the highly excited states are short range entangled. Right, so here I'm showing entanglement entropy as a function of disorder strength for different system sizes, averaged over all states in the band. And you find that at high disorder, right, you see that entanglement is very small and it saturates as a function of system size. Right, so this gives you the area, this confirms the area law for excited states.
Is that a particular eigenstate?
This is of course. Right. This is I take Hamiltonian, right? I diagonalize it, then I average over many disorder realizations. And sort of acute picture is to look at how entanglement distribution changes across transition. Right. So I start from the delocalized phase where entanglement is essentially volume law, right? And what I'm showing here is entanglement entropy of all eigenstates for a given disorder realization. You see that almost all states are, right, they all look terminal, they all have volume law. Then I increase disorder. At some point, I hit the transition, right? And you see that something very interesting happens. So the entanglement entropy is very broadly distributed, right? So you find states of all kinds. You find states which have no entanglement or have almost volume law entanglement. So there is a very broad distribution. But as you go to even stronger disorder, you find that almost all states, apart from a few very rare events, have very little entanglement, right? So this again illustrates this area law. So I won't describe any more numerical tests, although many were done. So let me just say a few words about dynamics and how it can be really probed in experiments. So first of all, constructions that I showed to you, right? I have integrals of motion which take values from, let's say, between 1, 2, and 2 to the L, right? It's essentially number of degrees of freedom in this block that I took. But of course, for practical purposes, it's much more convenient to redefine variables, right? And introduce a set of integrals of motion which can take only two values, 0 or 1, right? So this effective spins. So I can introduce always using this construction, right? I can do relabeling and I can introduce conserved effective spins which commute with the Hamiltonian, right? With Z component which commutes with the Hamiltonian. And they would be such that each of them is in principle is a complicated operator which involves many spins, but it has a support which is localized, right? Which is roughly has the size of localization length. Now, in terms of this effective spins, the Hamiltonian would have a very simple structure because I know it's not allowed to have any tau plus or tau minus, so it's just a combination of tau z's and their products and products of three and so on, okay? And of course, so effectively, let's say first term represents the energy of each subsystem, right? And then their interactions and three and so on. So these terms between distance subsystems, right? If I take two distance effective spins, right? One here and one there, they would have exponentially small interaction energy. And effectively, what this picture tells you can always introduce such variables in the localized phase. You have qubits which do not decay, right? But of course, they can dephase. So all you have left is dephasing. And this dephasing is essentially as I described. And one signature of it is this universal logarithmic growth of entanglement entropy. Problem is not so easy to measure. But the good news is that any local observable would show decaying oscillations and this log growth of entanglement is actually equivalent to the power law decay of any local observable. And so let me just flash this picture so you can come up with some concrete protocol, and you find that given spin, let's say it's a spin ecotype experiment, you can see that you look at the decay of spin echo signal and you see that it follows a beautiful power law over many decades in time. Right, so this is really how you would measure it in an experiment. So, okay, there are many open questions, so but I guess I'm out of time, so let me jump to conclusions. So, well, let me mention one thing. So one, I think, very interesting problem is to try to prove the existence of the many-body localized phase. And this sort of new understanding of the simple entanglement structure and area law of the many-body localized states seems to be quite helpful and suggests some route of how to really prove that many-body localized phase is stable. So, but let me just summarize. So main message was that we obtained the description of many-body localized phase and it exhibits universal dynamical and interesting entanglement properties. And let me just thank my collaborators. So Max is grad student at MIT, so who is finishing up and looking for a postdoc this year. And Zlatko is here, so he's moved this year. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah. So many body localized state has volume law for entropy.
It has volume law if you consider dynamics, right? If you just consider eigenstates, it has area law.
But if I had a many body unlocalized state.
Unlocalized state, it would have volume law. Eigenstate, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but does this property distinguish?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's exactly. I think. Yeah.
But dynamics always evolving.
Dynamics. So, but of course, dynamics is different, right? So, if you consider delocalized phase and you ask, let's say, I prepare product state, how would entanglement grow? Entanglement would grow linearly in time. So, but in this case, right, so it's both of these distinguished. I think both of these are probably can be used as a signature of many-body localization. And in particular, you know, this log growth, I think, is very useful because this is something you can try to catch in DMRG simulations, right? You start from product state, low entanglement, and you just monitor how your entanglement grows, right? And if it grows as a log, okay, so there is a pretty good chance that you hit a many-body localized phase.
So just to understand, very intuitive. Suppose I drink to a small volume, many organic molecules.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you want them to have a dipole moment, or
no, not it can be induced.
Uh huh. Right.
For example, nitrogen molecules. They don't have a dipole moment. They can be so I freeze mm-hmm. them in some configuration.
You so freeze them by disorder, or how do you freeze them?
Or you
nail them with a hammer?
Uh-huh. So what you are saying is very interesting because through the phenomena that you are discussing, the virtual fluctuations,
mm-hmm.
that is a polarization induced by one nitrogen molecule, basically van der Waals type of thing.
Yes, yes.
Will produce some quantum coherence across.
Some very complicated, right? Of course. I mean, I don't think it's something that you would be able to ever disentangle, right? But yeah, they would get.
It should be experimentally measurable because if I had put mm-hmm. it at some point and then look at it as a function of time, the nature of
right.
dipole fluctuation
mm-hmm.
Should reflect your.
Yes.
So it's an experimental.
Right. So I think the cool thing is that really, right? So. Really is the reflection.
You don't want mass transport.
Right. Right, I think generically I don't get mass transport, but I always get any local observable, right, which starts out being, let's say local degree of freedom is in some superposition state, and I can monitor how quantum coherence is lost, right? So the statement is that quantum coherence would be lost in a power law fashion with an exponent which is essentially tells you the localization length. Right, so and this seems to be very generic, right? So any system like that, this is what one should look for.
So the statement is, the conjecture is that you can always find some basis where you can write a Hamiltonian without any of diagonal
where, wait. So no. This is not, I mean, conjecture is that you can find such, you can define such local qubits, right?
Yeah.
Which are infinitely long-lived, but they dephase, of course, right?
Yeah.
So their dynamics is really limited to dephasing. Well, Hamiltonian, you see, I can always pick a basis of eigenstates, and then it would not have of diagonal elements. So I mean,
isn't that these are single particle
basis? What do you mean single particle? No, these are real spins, right? These are real many body operators, right? So, but the statement is that you see
Hamiltonian in terms of how
tau is, yeah.
So why is this tau z?
So this is, so you can define, so You see, this is an interesting system, right? So you start with some initial state, and during evolution, it conserves locally, it conserves a lot of information. And these tau z's are exactly the quantities which tell you what is conserved about during evolution. Right, so phases between them get randomized, right? So phases are lost during evolution because you get entangled with parts of the system far away, right? But, and you know, another thing to keep in mind is that generally this tau z operators, right, they expressed in terms of physical spins in a complicated manner, right?
Yeah.
They would involve, right, they depend on, they know about states of other spins. So
in terms of linear spins, not local.
Yeah,
it's local.
In one dimension, you know, the fermions play the role of kinks, essentially the solid form of your spin level, your spin system. In higher dimensions, you don't have the Jordan Wigner.
I think it's general, right? So as long as I know, as long as I can connect my eigenstates to product states, right? So I think I can always define this integral of motion in terms of projectors onto certain groups of eigenstates.
So you don't need to have these sort of rigid shifts
essentially. No. No, it's just, I mean, I just wrote it for convenience in this form, but in principle, originally, right, I define it in terms of projectors on two sets of eigenstates and argues that these projectors are local.
Okay, let's continue discussion over coffee. Thanks, Dina.